Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, today we learned that Tim Frazier is done for the year. Surgery today on a ruptured Achilles. He can apply for medical hardship at a fifth year of eligibility, which I think everyone expects him to do. But he is done for the year and a big blow for Penn State basketball. At least in Penn State football, as tough as the emotional blow is, with the loss of Michael Motti for this week's game. Mike Hull is an outstanding player who can step in and play. Penn State now has to figure out what to do without its best player in a five-man game on the floor. That's tough. Penn State will play Wisconsin Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Time to bring in my good friend, the play-by-play voice of Wisconsin football and basketball, Matt LePay. Leap, great to have you with us.
Great to talk to you, Steve. It's been a while. Good to be on with you.
It's been a while, indeed. We can both lament guards being out, right?
Boy, yeah. When I saw the news about Tim Frazier, it just, if you're a fan of the Big Ten, I mean, you don't have to be a Penn State fan to be disappointed at that news. And Wisconsin, as you said, Steve, is going through that with Josh Gosser, who tore his ACL a few weeks ago. And to see if Frazier, who's just such an exciting player, and the league has just lost two really good defenders, among other things, that both of those guys have in their skill set. So that's a tough one for not just Penn State, but for the league.
Yeah, and I felt the same way about Gosser, because the first thing I was talking about the day it happened, I said, you don't understand what a good all-around basketball player that guy is. I mean, he may have been in the shadow of somebody else. This was going to be his time to shine.
Yeah, without a doubt, he was going to be the guy that most people figured would be the starter at point guard, and he's such a tough kid. You figure that he, like Tim Frazier, will come back and be as strong as ever next year. But I think, given in Wisconsin's case, having had Jordan Taylor for seemingly forever, I suppose the way opponents would look at it, Gosser was going to slide into that lead guard role, and they would work George Marshall in there. George is a redshirt freshman, and I think he'll be pretty good, but he's a redshirt freshman, so there's going to be some growing pains there. So, yeah, I think both, when you look at football and basketball, both programs have had to deal on the injury front here of late, clearly over your way with Michael Motti, which, again, that's horrible news for anybody who likes to watch really good linebackers. And Wisconsin had the day that Gosser went down with the knee injury during the football game, Joel Stavi, a redshirt freshman quarterback who'd really been coming along, he got hurt against Michigan State, and he's done for the year. So it's the nature of sports, we know, but it doesn't make it any easier for fan bases or just fans of Big Ten football.
Yeah, and Joel Stave was really coming on and playing some really good football within what Brett wanted him to do. But Kurt Phillips now steps in. He may be a fifth-year guy, but it's only his third start. In some ways, is this a freshman quarterback in a fifth-year player's body?
In some ways it is, Steve, because Kurt is a really smart guy, and in talking with him, especially these last few weeks, he really talked about how much he was able to absorb by being around Russell Wilson last year, Scott Tolzien the two previous years, and when Scotty was a starting quarterback here. You can learn a lot by being around them, but I think, as anybody who has played would tell you, there's nothing like being out there. And Kurt, in a couple of situations, I think overall he played very well last week against Ohio State, had that clutch drive at the end of regulation. But there are still times when I think the inexperience in a game setting shows. I would say in some ways he's like a freshman, but overall much wiser than the average freshman, just because he's gone through so much with the injuries, but has been around the college game as long as he has. But it's not realistic to expect instant stardom although that drive at the end of regulation with no timeouts left against Ohio State, that's you can, if things had broken better for Wisconsin in overtime, that's where maybe legendary status is a bit of a stretch, but that's where you become remembered. Unfortunately, Wisconsin couldn't carry that momentum from the end of regulation on into overtime.
I think two of the really underrated players in this entire conference are two guys that can help him out. One is the tight end Jacob Pedersen. The other one is Aberderis. Those two guys, what can they mean, and what do they mean overall to what Wisconsin wants to do?
Mean a ton. Pedersen, earlier in the year, was not catching as many passes as some people thought, but there was transition at the quarterback position. There was a lot of transition on the offensive line, three new primary starters. Pedersen was still evolving as an all-around tight end, but of late he has really been a factor. Six catches last week. He was on the receiving end of that Phillips touchdown pass in the final seconds of the fourth quarter against Ohio State. Experience and a security blanket, maybe that's all in the one. Same with Aberderis. The challenge for both, and especially I would say, Steve, for Aberderis, is that opposing teams know how good he is now. He's not a secret anymore. And opposing teams also know the other wide receivers are not very experienced. They're growing. They're getting better. Jordan Frederick. They're trying to get Chase Hammond more involved in the offense. Jeff Duckworth has been around a little bit. Kenzel Doe a little bit. But I think opposing teams, it's no great secret that among the wide receivers, the guy you need to really keep a close eye on is Aberderis. Still, he's caught 41 passes. He gets about 18 yards a catch. He is still, you have to honor him, but teams have at times really locked into him and have said, okay, let's see if they can get it to one of their other receivers. And that's been a big challenge for Jared.
We've announced all 75 of Monte Ball's touchdowns. Give us an idea of the privilege it's been watching him play the game and what makes him special.
It's been amazing, Steve, because he has done so much of this in about 2.5 years or so. Now, he played some back in 09. He remembers his first touchdown vividly. I think a lot of Badger fans have to maybe reach back and think about it a little bit, reach back into the memory bank. It was a game against Iowa back in October of 09. But the majority of his statistics has been compiled in about 2.5 years. Last year was ridiculous what he was able to do. And I think he helped make Russell Wilson better as a quarterback, and clearly Russell made Monte Ball better as a tailback. This year, he's had to overcome a lot from before training camp started, when there was the incident when he was jumped and got beat up rather badly and missed a good chunk of training camp. There was the transition here in Madison. A lot of talk about the coaching staff transition with six new assistant coaches, and then there was also the offensive line coaching change after the second game of the year against Oregon State. There was that to contend with, but there was a lot of personnel change as well, with three new starters on the offensive line, new quarterback, new fullback, as I mentioned a minute ago, receivers that had to gain some experience, so opposing teams are really dialed in to Ball, and that made the going really tough for him early on. But of late, with the exception of the Michigan State game, which Michigan State, as much as it struggled, the defense has been pretty good. Monte's put up some really big numbers. Last week, 191 against Ohio State. So he's had to overcome a lot, and I think he has still put together, well, the stats would show you that he has put together a pretty impressive year. He believes that he is a better all-around player by having come back for his senior year, which was a decision that surprised a lot of people, myself included. But he thinks now, having gone through all of this, that it's made him better. I guess we'll find out in the draft. But he did surprise folks last January when he announced he was coming back. But I think through it all, he's put together a very good senior year.
And what it's also done is it's kept quietly, I think, a guy I still think is one of the top 10 backs in this league, James White. getting spot time here and there. I mean, how good those has Jimmy been in this whole thing and handling it? And how good's he been when he's been out there?
Well, you know, James has really had a good year. Last year, I think it was a little frustrating. He wasn't entirely healthy, and let's face it, Ball was running wild. So why take him out? But 2 years ago, White was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. So he knows what it's like to be a major factor. And he's bounced back well this year. He's been healthy. He's made some big plays. He's averaging about 7 yards a carry. Now, last week, the workload was Ball. He had 39 carries, and White had 8. But when James gets the ball, he is a huge threat. Go back a couple of weeks ago. Now, I know Indiana's rush defense is not good, but there was momentum. There was reason for Indiana to be excited about the game. It's late in the first half. It's 17-7 Wisconsin. Back at the Wisconsin 31-yard line, 3rd and 16. The Badgers run the ball, and 69 yards later, James White's in the end zone. The game's broke open. That's the capability that a guy like James White has. Now, to do it against Penn State's defense is going to be more difficult by far than to do it against Indiana. But the point is, White, when he's out there, is very capable of making a big play, much like Monte Ball is.
Before Saturday, I would have told you that I thought the best collection of 7 linebackers in the same stadium at the same time in this conference would be at Penn State, Wisconsin, because I think Mike Hall has really started to come on. Give us an idea, Borland, Taylor, Armstrong, how good that linebacking core now is for Wisconsin.
It has been, I don't know if the coaches would tell you it's been a surprise, but I think outside the locker room, those three collectively have been a surprise, especially the play of Ethan Armstrong. When you last saw him, he was being carted off in an ambulance. He was hurt in the game against the Nittany Lions last November. He's had to overcome multiple injuries to get to where he is right now. He was a guy who walked onto the program, was awarded a scholarship here this past summer, and he has really played well. And last week he was particularly good. Wisconsin did not have Chris Borland. He was out, little leg issue. They're hoping he can be back this week. They played a lot of nickel. They moved Armstrong inside. Even in their base defense, he played inside, and he played very well. He's knowledgeable enough. He could play probably like Hull. He could play any of the three linebacker spots. And I still think somewhat quietly Mike Taylor has really had a terrific year. I say somewhat quietly. You look at these postseason awards list, and you may not see his name. But I think people within the league know how good and consistently good Mike has been, especially these last couple of seasons.
I think he's a great player. I think he and Borland are about as good a 1-2 punch that Penn State will see all season.
Yeah, that's where it's been a frustrating point for Brett Bielema. He's, on the one hand, he tries not to make too much of a big deal about awards, but I think on the other hand, you get a little, you feel almost insulted for the kid when he's not listed for some of these postseason honors. And again, you know, we'll find out what the pro scouts think and all of that down the road. But we're talking about college linebackers here anyway. And I think these three, Borland, Armstrong, and Taylor, have really worked well, played well together. Whether Taylor gets on an awards list or not, I think the coaches would tell you freely and probably without being asked how good all of those guys have been and how solid. And Taylor has had to come back from his own set of injuries, about a couple of years removed from his own ACL rehab. So the career for Mike, I think, has been very, very good.
Shelton Johnson, getting him back there, what has he meant as a guy that's really been a stabilizing force in what's become a very good secondary?
Yeah, well, it's been, I think, better than many people expected it would be. When they missed him for a little bit of time with a broken forearm, it hurt because he's a captain. Not the most vocal guy in the world, but he's more of a leader by example. He and Des Southward, the two safeties, have really come on and have played well. Southward, I know you're asking about Shelton Johnson, but Southward's a guy who does a great job. Yeah. He has 7 tackles for loss this season. He just seems to show up a lot. But I think, you know, Shelton helped stabilize that secondary. It's a veteran group. Devin Smith being healthy at corner has been a big asset to this defense. And Marcus Cromartie, who was thrown into it last year, much more, I think, than people expected because of the Smith injury and had his ups and downs, has been very solid. This, Steve, collectively, I think, has been a considerably better defense than a lot of people anticipated. I guess the difference from good to great is getting that stop, you know, if it's in an overtime situation, which they have had 2 of them, or in the Nebraska game when the offense started to scuffle in the second half. That's subjective whether you say it's good to great. I just know it has been much better without maybe that overall star power that some other programs have. I think as a group, this defensive side of the ball has played very good football.
I heard a question yesterday I never thought I would hear in college football, but now with divisional play, it does bring up this question. Brett Bielema was actually asked yesterday whether he'd hold a couple guys out with the Big Ten championship game next week, and of course he gave the right answer and said, no, I'm not going to hold anybody out because you can't do that. But I don't think that's smart.
Right.
With all due respect to Tony Dungy, I don't think it's smart.
Yeah, it's and it's different. This is college. In the NFL, okay, depending on, if the coach has the pulse of his team, and in pro football, if you think that when in doubt, hold him out, okay, that's fine. Do whatever, because you don't know how many games you have left. You may play one, you may play four if you're in pro football. But in college, they know the drill. And Brett was actually asked this question last Monday, too, because they had clinched by beating Indiana in this obviously unusual season in the league. But I think in college, well, A, all these guys are so competitive anyway, but B, you're playing for as in the case of Bielema in Wisconsin, you're playing for as good of a bowl position as you can get. Of course, the Rose Bowl is in play, but you're still jockeying for position to play, if it's not going to be Pasadena, playing as attractive a bowl game as you can. But I think the bottom line, even beyond that, if they're going to keep score here in college, you're going to go play. And I think I can't see Brett doing it any other way. The injury question this week revolves around Chris Borland and the right tackle Robbie Havenstein. They're hoping both can be ready this week, but I think you're going to see Monte Ball. I think you're going to see all the frontline players because they're going to need him to be competitive against a very good Penn State.
Finally, in your area, what is the reaction to Maryland and Rutgers, especially considering they'll be in the same division with Wisconsin and Penn State?
To be honest, it's been more of a shrug of the shoulders with people. It's like, well, okay, it's going to happen. Everybody else is either being realigned or expanding. There's no real football history between the two schools. There's been some basketball in the last 10 years or so, 10, 12 years. Wisconsin has played Rutgers a couple of times and has met Maryland, including once in the tournament when the Terps won it all. Back in 01, 02. But yeah, I think a lot of folks here it's a little bit bittersweet. They know it's going to happen. They know the league that grew up watching is changing, but they also are traditionalists. And if anything, Steve, you wonder about the tradition rivalries. Already some of these are erupted, such as Wisconsin and Iowa. Mm-hmm. Michigan State will roll off here for a few years. I think that's the big question that a lot of these fans have. Knowing what tradition means in college football, how often are you going to get to play those rivalry games? And I think that's the question that we all have to see answered.
Then again, 21 years ago, Wisconsin and Penn State didn't have much of a history, and now it's the season-ending game.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Yeah,
because,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think if you're Jim Delaney, I think you have to look ahead. It's probably a bigger gamble to sit around and do nothing. So if you're going to grow, nothing wrong with growing to the Eastern Seaboard. So I think it makes sense.
Matt, always a pleasure. Can't wait to see you this weekend.
Looking forward to it, Steve. Take care. Have a good one.
Okay, my friend. Thanks. That is Matt LePay, the play-by-play voice of Wisconsin football and basketball, back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the Central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. We head to the bottom of the hour in news. Today's show from the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio. Jack Hamm calls it the Chateau, and justifiably so. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, the Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Tim Frazier done for the year. Surgery today, ruptured Achilles. We already know Mike Maudie's not playing Saturday for Penn State against Wisconsin. And so we move forward. Tonight, Bill O'Brien is on the Penn State football show from Damon's from 6:05 to 7. So 90 minutes from now, I'll be there with him. So Rutgers and Maryland now a part of the mix. And could there be 15 and 16 to cap this off? We'll wait and see. There were some interesting answers today by Jim Delaney about all of this. And the commissioner talked about several things. The divisions aren't set. The Maryland people, some Maryland people had let it slip that Illinois was switching over to the Legends and Rutgers and Maryland would be in the leaders. And while that is still a distinct possibility it could happen, it has not been set. Next, so we'll talk about some of this. Get your reaction to this as well as we continue. I want to get your thoughts on all this here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Big news day, of course. Tim Frazier. Now, I'll be frank with you. I did know about it Sunday night. I've known Sunday night about that Tim wasn't going to make it the rest of the year. But you wait for them to make the official announcement because, you know, at that point he had not had an MRI. And so to go on and say, hey, look, I don't think Frazier's going to play, wouldn't have been the right thing to do because he hadn't had an MRI yet. He wasn't going to have one until he got back to State College, and he did. He confirmed it, and he had surgery today. He can apply for medical hardship a fifth year. He will get it and be back with the program next year. He has to make that decision himself, but I would be shocked if he decided against it. I mean, I think he needs to for his own professional career to come back and play a fifth year. He would have been a very, 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 very difficult matchup for Bucknell on Friday. I'm not really sure they could have matched up with him on Friday. As good as Mike Muscala is, he's really good. Timmy would have been the best player on the floor. Not going to be there now. That changes the dynamics of everything for Friday, and it changes the dynamics for the rest of the season. And for a guy like DJ Newbill, who could have had been afforded the luxury of being the secondary running mate to the primetime guy in Tim Frazier and really take care of his own business, wean himself into the offense, wean himself into the defense, really take care of his own game, while making then eventually making other people around him better, he's not going to be afforded that luxury. He's going to have to handle the ball now much, much more than he did before. And that changes everything for him. Of course, Mike Maudie, we know, is not playing Saturday. Mike Hull starts there. And, of course, the Rutgers move, which was known by everyone but was made official today because they wanted to make sure that each school, Rutgers and Maryland, had their own day to be announced into the conference. What is interesting in listening to the Jim Delaney press conference is the number of times he referenced Penn State. I mean, he referenced Penn State so often during this thing about being the bridge that allowed this to happen. And you could tell the Maryland people and the Rutgers people are thrilled beyond words that they're within the Big Ten footprint now and that Penn State is also there with them. Now, when Rutgers gets in still needs to be determined. Maryland's coming in July 1st, 2014. That's established. Rutgers has to do what West Virginia, Syracuse, and Pitt did. They'll have to buy their way out of the Big East and do so on a timetable. And the buyout in the Big East is $10 million as opposed to the ACC, which is $50 million. There's a lot of talk that they'll negotiate that down if possible. Now, Rutgers is $10 million, but it's over 27 months. So you have to give 27 months. Well, they aren't going to get 27 months. They're going to try. I'm sure Rutgers is going to do whatever it can financially, paying above the mark, to make sure that it ends up being an exit that takes 19 months and gets them to July 1st, 2014. So that's 19 months to do that. So that was brought up today. Nothing has been said about divisions. Jim Delaney said he's heard that. It's pure speculation. But this, you know, let me tell you where the story came from. ESPN got the story from someone who was in the room of the Maryland Board of Regents, and the president of Maryland is the one that made the statement. So that's where it came from. So in case you're wondering, well, you know, how can they come up with something like that? That's where it came from. The money that it can bring in certainly is exponential. Big Ten contracts are up for renegotiation with their broadcast partners in 2017. Fox News Corp, I believe, has bought a minority share of YES Network, which, of course, is the Yankees and the Nets. And with that in mind, that means Fox, which is which owns 51% of the Big Ten Network, they can then maybe put together a cable bundle to bundle the Big Ten Network and YES within the New York, New Jersey market. So that's what you're looking at. As you know, and of course, the same story with Comcast in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And of course, the basketball arena is the Comcast Center that Maryland plays in. So you're talking about 15 to 16 million additional households. And of course, the cable fees that go with it. And that's what you're looking at. Scheduling-wise, basketball, football, it's difficult with a bigger conference. There is some speculation, it's only speculation, that the four major conferences go to 16, which is 64 schools. And then from there, everybody just plays within their conference. And then the four conference winners go to the semifinals and final, and then on to the final. Interesting. Don't know whether it's realistic or not, but I heard somebody float that idea. Interesting. So, when you look at the money part of this, Jim Delaney is a very smart man. He understands how all of this works. He also understands the value of patience, and he understands the value of when to move. For a long time, 21 years, the Big Ten was patient with 11. Not the greatest scheduling model in the world, but they were patient with 11. And then they, of course, felt, hey, look, there was a need to get Nebraska in. Now, the Big Ten is slow to move, but they really broke everything open with the Penn State move in 1989, then making it official in June of 1990. Broke everything open. That's when the expansion floodgate and the landscape changed with that particular move. So they make that move. And then slowly but surely things changed. The Big East suddenly felt like we have to do something. They form a conference. Rutgers is a charter member.
And again, what Rutgers is facing, why Rutgers could not give, and the Big Ten can't give a date is when Rutgers is in, because they face a $10 million buyout and the 27-month rule. Well, if you give them more money, they have already proven between West Virginia, Syracuse, and Pitt, they'll let you out sooner. I mean, look at West Virginia. I mean, they were playing in the Big East last year. They're not playing in the Big East now. They're playing in the Big 12. It's a good fit for them. Pitt and Syracuse are going to start playing in the ACC next year. Also, with Pitt and Syracuse coming in, Jim Delaney protected his Mid-Atlantic flank and did it impressively. So, if Rutgers and Maryland end up in the same division as Penn State, those rivalries are reestablished. Rutgers is already on the Penn State schedule in 14 and 15 anyway. But it was interesting to listen to Jim Delaney today, the number of times he kept referencing Penn State and how Penn State opened up this corridor to make this happen. You know, just by its mere presence. So now you have an expanded conference. The question is, where next? Where next? You know, 14, I mean, obviously 14's workable. The SEC's making 14 work. Now what will the SEC do? What will the Big 12 do? The Big 12's at 10. Okay? The Pac-12 is at a dozen. And Larry Scott, who is a very proactive commissioner, let's face it, what's he going to do? I mean, does he go into Oklahoma, Oklahoma State? Texas Tech, Baylor, say, come on, let's go. Westward bound, make it 16? He could. I mean, he could do that. Does the Big 12 go after Florida State, Clemson, which has been rumored? Get themselves back to 12. I mean, Kansas State's going to wrap up its season, by the way. You know, they're not in the running for the national championship any longer, but they have to play Texas. That's it. There's no Big 12 championship game. Now what does the ACC do? And the Big East, I can tell you right now, when it comes to the Big East, Boise State, San Diego State, and the independent BYU are exploring going to the Mountain West and not going to the Big East at all. Because when they came out with the BCS model, there are five automatics. ACC, Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, Big 10. Big East wasn't one of them. They were put in the category of the other five with the Mountain West. So they're sitting there saying, excuse me, if that's the case, then why do we bother? Why don't we just, you know, cut our costs and stay out here? All right, let's go to Doug in Wellsboro. Hi, Doug. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. How are you today, Doug?
Good. Hey, regarding this conference expansion, I find it kind of funny that Joe tried to put together his all-Eastern sports conference back, you know, many years ago. And who were the teams that voted against that? Wasn't Pitt one of them?
What happened was this, Doug, is that Joe put it together, and it was going to be BC, Syracuse, Pitt, Rutgers, West Virginia, Temple, and yes, he was going to try and convince Maryland to be a part of it. And what happened was is that in talking, now you got to remember the landscape at the time too, okay? This is pre-all TV explosion, all right? So I want to be fair to Dave Gavitt. But Dave Gavitt, of course, is a part of the Big East Conference, one of the founders. And then talking to Pitt and Syracuse, talking to BC and Syracuse, he was wondering if he could help leverage and get Pitt to join the Big East to play basketball. Well, Bill Flynn, the athletic director at BC, and Jay Krauthammel, the athletic director at Syracuse, convinced Dean Billick at Pitt to join the Big East in basketball. And then Joe had a meeting with Dave Gavitt at Bradley International Airport in Winslow Locks, Connecticut.
And in that meeting, Gavin indicated that they were not going to invite Penn State to be a part of the Big East Basketball Conference. And Joe was athletic director at the time. That's why he was representing him. And Mike Trangese, as the story goes, said to Dave Gavitt after Joe left, he says, "Do you think we made a big mistake?" And Gavitt says, "You know what? I don't know. They're a sleeping giant." Well, in the end, we've now seen 30 years later, Dave Gavitt, who, by the way, Providence is a basketball-only school, so Dave Gavitt was trying to take care of his money-making sport, which is his job. That's what he's supposed to do. And he's a brilliant man. But at the same time, we're seeing 30 years later, it ended up being a big mistake.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on recruiting? Do you think it will affect recruiting, will have no bearing on it?
I don't think it'll have any bearing on it at all, Doug. In fact, I think Bill O'Brien has an idea of the kind of football players he wants, and some of them may be in Georgia, some of them may be in Maryland, some of them may be in Pennsylvania, some of them may be in New Jersey, some in Ohio. He's just going after what he thinks are the best fit for what he wants. Now, when it comes to the Maryland-Jersey corridor, which I assume that's what you're asking about, keep in mind when Penn State came into the Big Ten that suddenly you saw some Big Ten schools coming in here. For example, Ryan Monday, Steve Breston, and so forth, ending up going to Michigan as examples. I think you'll see Big Ten schools going into Maryland, Penn State being one of them, going into New Jersey and saying, look, you can be a part of this mix at a big-time school like Penn State, and guess what? You're still going to play a game here in Maryland, and Maryland's going to be coming up to Penn State. You're still going to play a game in New Jersey. Rutgers is going to be coming here as well. Actually, you can make it work in your favor with relative ease, depending on the kid.
I just think Larry Johnson is going to have a harder time down in Hampton Roads area. You know, if a kid can go to Maryland, be in the Big Ten, play right away, I just think it makes his job a little bit harder. You know, and Penn State's always pulled from New Jersey, too. So I don't know, some of those kids that are 50-50, you're going to say, hey, I can stay at Rutgers, I can stay home, play in front of a family, you know, stay close to home, when they used to travel to Penn State.
Well, you can play close to home and still play it. You can play in a bigger stadium with a better track record and a more committed program, okay?
Right.
And
yeah.
And because of the 15 scholarship thing, Doug, you are going to play right away.
Yeah. Hey, my last question is, these rumors about Bill going to the NFL, why doesn't he just nip that in the bud and say, I'm under contract with Penn State? Is his agent telling him to leave that hanging out there? Why doesn't he just end it, all the speculation, and just say, I'm staying at Penn State, I'll be there at least next year, something like that?
Well, he's elected not to, and I think part of it with Bill is this. Bill is a very focused, tunnel vision guy. In other words, he's really thinking about Wisconsin after just thinking about Indiana last week. And I think he just gets into that mode of just focusing on that moment, that team. And there are no jobs in the NFL that are open. Okay, what job in the NFL is open? There isn't
one.
Not
yet.
Right.
Not yet.
Well, there are every year. You and I both know it. But there aren't any right now. I mean, and there won't be any available until January. So I think he gets into that mode of, I don't want to address something that doesn't exist. I think he gets into that. I think he gets into that mode, and to him, the most important thing is winning this week's game.
I know we're up against the clock. The whole thing, though, with this hanging out there, though, I know you can't talk about Hackenberg, but I can. I mean, Hackenberg is the key. So, I mean, you can't let that hanging out there. You've got to say, yes, I'm going to be here, get Hackenberg in there, of course, Adam Brenneman, stuff like that. But I just wish he would nip it in the bud.
So. Doug, let me put you this way. What he says at a press conference and what he says to a young man may be two different things.
No, I know how the game's played. So.
Well,
all
I mean,
right, thanks,
I mean in a private conversation, they may say, what's the deal? I don't think those who are being recruited by Penn State have to read tea leaves. I think they've been told.
All right. Okay, thanks, Steve.
Doug, thank you. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. There we go. If that doesn't scream happy Thanksgiving, nothing does.
Exactly. We're grooving.
I'll tell you. And Kevin was in the back room doing the dance. I guess he tripped. All right. So, does he even exist anymore?
He's around. You'll see him Friday.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
He's busy selling.
Selling.
Well, all right. Tomorrow night, Big Ben Jones, Steakhouse.com. Yes, we're going to do a show on Thursday, Thanksgiving. And then the gang is all together for one scintillating hour at the Bryce Jordan Center on Friday. Drew Kelly brings back my stuff.
He promises he will.
He promises. Oh, well.
I know. It all lies in his hands.
Just the mere thought of that just frightens the living daylights out of me. It is Thanksgiving week, so take some time to give thanks for what you have, and at the same time, if you have the means, to do something to help somebody else. Whether it's buying a toy for the Toys for Tots campaign or whether it's putting food in the food bank, whatever you can do to help would be greatly appreciated. We have a very special area in the valley. You look around and ask yourself, when you look at the beauty of the area, the people of the area, would you want to live anywhere else? I wouldn't. And very fortunate to be a part of the Sunbury Broadcasting family. Whatever you can do to help would be greatly appreciated. It has been an incredible 2 days with Maryland and Rutgers getting in. Plus, we've mixed in a lot when it comes to a preview of Wisconsin. Bill O'Brien will join me an hour from now at Damon's. Because it's Thanksgiving week, we always have the show on Tuesday nights, Thanksgiving week, and the tradition continues. Bill will join me from Damon's to take your questions at gopsusports.com/askthecoach. That's gopsusports.com/askthecoach. We'll put that on there for you. And then tomorrow, Nate Bink, Ben Jones, Steakhouse.com, working on Malcolm Moran for tomorrow, too. I want to get a national perspective on the Rutgers-Maryland moves. And then on Thursday, take a long look at all this Doug Birdsong. Dougie's going to join us on Friday, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he'll be around. I think Dave Paulson will be around, too. So.
Well, Dave Paulson, of course, was on our show yesterday, which is great. And then we'll get some comments from Pat Chambers tomorrow on Tim Frazier, out for the year. That's a major blow to a basketball team that needed a fine line of luck. We'll talk to you tomorrow.